from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning. Welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier, broadcasting from my basement bunker. And I was laughing because it's actually gotten a little cold down here, so I'm running an electric heater, one of those ones that you buy off the infomercials, but they work really well. So again, I want to thank the energy industry, all of you, whether it's the electric producers or the fossil fuel producers and everyone in between. Thank you for this energy to run this heater. Matt Henderson, I'm sure, is still shoveling coal out at his farmhouse in Homan County there. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing well, and I can either confirm or deny. But Bill, I think we know what you're doing. You're sitting at home and buying stuff off of infomercials. I think we need to get you back to work here soon.
Well, I'm actually hoping to get sponsored by the maker of this fine product on here on the show. And I heard a little chuckle there. DC Taylor keeping us on the air as always.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Welcome to another program, another weekend here.
It certainly is another weekend, and Rusty Fender will be joining us in a little bit for the always popular Fender's Fast Facts. And as we record, I just want to reminisce. This week was a cold one. We saw overcast. We saw some snow. We saw some. I'll put it this way. Matt was joking. I spent 2 days out in the field, Matt. I didn't tell you this before the broadcast. 2 days in the field. 6 in the morning till approximately 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon with the corporate photographer, because Cabot sent up a corporate photographer. And I forgot how cold it was after spending all that time in Florida. I forgot how cold one could get after being out on the site. So kudos to the men and the women who work the energy industry and make sure that we have the energy that we need and the heat that we need during this time frame. I have a renewed sense of appreciation for work that they do.
Well, it is true, as you mentioned. You know, we sometimes are able to sit inside, enjoy the weather, and look out the windows. But the beat goes on. The men and women out there are continuing to keep us, as you mentioned, warm and able to turn our stoves on. And we do appreciate all the hard work that they do.
Well, before I jump into our news stories, I know you have an announcement about an upcoming conference that you're working on and you want to discuss it. Let's get to it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So, as we've talked before, and I know we've had our friend Joe Barone from Shale Directories on, and we have our Shale Directories Meet a Member, his members on numerous times, but partnering, working with Joe, and we're putting on our 8th annual Midstream PA conference. This was a delay from the fall, you know, due to the pandemic, but we are hosting this event February 4th out in State College at Toff Trees Resort. But due to the pandemic, we're doing this as a hybrid conference. So we do have in-person seating, which is, you know, is limited, but we're also having streaming online as well. So, you can find more information at midstreampa.com for, you know, ways to get tickets and log in. We do have some exciting speakers. Our good friend Tom Pyle, who was on here, I think last week, he's going to have a conversation and kind of talk about what's going on from the Biden administration. What do we expect, and, you know, what's that mean for energy and, the future, and, how to work together and, continue to move the ball forward. The Marcellus Shale Coalition. We have several of our midstream companies. Pam Whitmer from UGI Energy. Mike Atchie from Williams will be there as well. So, appreciate it. It's great information. It's always well received. And I know I always walk away with some tidbits of information. And again, you can go to midstreampa.com to find more about that. And we'll be sure to have some of this information, some of these speakers on the show here in the future. So, thank you.
Well, and of course, Matt, I can't speak highly enough. The conferences are full of information. In fact, Shale Gas News will be down like we have for the last couple of years. We'll set up a little recording studio, if you will, somewhere on the grounds there, and speak with some of the guests, some of the speakers, and bring what content we can to those listening to the program in the weeks that follow. So, if you can't make it, have no worries. We will be able to share some of the highlights from the conference with you through the program. A couple of news stories. LNG shipping rates from U.S. surge to record highs as Asia goes on a buying boom. And this caught me by surprise earlier in the week. Asia, especially like in the China area, certain parts of China, were hit with like way below record cold, freezing temperatures. In Europe, even saw a drop in temperature as well. Again, we've talked about this at length over the last couple of years. We've been blessed to have a bit of a warm spell as it relates to the winter times, or a milder winter. But we saw it hit again, and we've said that it's a cycle, and it'll come. Come full circle, and I think it has. So the cost of shipping liquefied natural gas from the U.S. to Asia hit a record high on Tuesday as the appetite for the fuel from buyers there and delays through the Panama Canal reduced the amount of ships for hire. Freezing temperatures across Asia and Europe have pushed the LNG prices and lifted wider gas prices as buyers grapple with shrinking inventories and the shortage of tankers. It's something, again, this is why we need more energy infrastructure. We talk about it at length on this program. Just because we get through a winter or a summer season with all the energy we need doesn't mean we'll have that same luxury the following year. The world needs more energy. It needs more accessible, clean burning natural gas. And to prevent it, to overregulate it, to make it too uneconomical to produce is a real serious threat to the world. And quite honestly, I know it didn't get super cold here yet in the Northeast. I did hear some, you know, rumblings that there might be a polar vortex coming in the next couple of weeks. But I know that the energy industry is here, and we have that resource, and we'll be able to meet our needs. Matt, what did you think about this story?
Yeah, it highlights to me is, you know, again, we're a global market and we're a global player in it. And it does provide different opportunities. As you mentioned, we've been relatively mild this winter. I've heard those rumblings of the polar vortex as well. And I think meteorologists like to say, cause it's a pretty cool word, I think, but yeah, it opens up other markets to ship our product and continues the development here in, you know, not just the Appalachian Basin, but across the country. So yeah, it's important. And I was a little surprised by it too, to see that pickup, especially, you know, when you flash back, what, maybe 6 months ago, when, or maybe a little bit more, things had just kind of come to a halt in terms of LNG exports. But yeah, it's good to see. We all remember 10, 12 years ago when there was all this discussion about exporting LNG, but of course, as a nation, we weren't set up for it. And, you know, I don't know what, $20, $30 billion investment later, now we are set up to be a global LNG player to become a powerhouse someday.
Another story here. U.S. oil exports set 71-year-old record. E&E News reports for the first time in more than 70 years, the U.S. exported more crude oil and petroleum products last year than it imported, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. However, the change is not expected to stick. EIA expects the United States to return to importing some crude oil and petroleum products more than it exports on an annual basis in both 21 and 22. We've talked about this before. And this probably has more to do with COVID and shifting the world demand and manufacturing demand and transportation demand, and the United States just being in a position to make up for it. But it begs the question, why would we go back to the way it was for the last 70 years? Why would we go back to importing these products? We should be making investments here. We should be in Pennsylvania and in the country. We shouldn't be dependent on these foreign sources. And I just like to highlight, our economy grows when we export more products than we import. So I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be looking at this and saying, hey, these types of refineries, these types of facilities, what are we doing as a commonwealth? What are we doing as a country to attract them to be here? But it's good to applaud the fact that the United States was able to, buck the trend, if you will. EIA also reports U.S. natural gas reserves slip amid low prices. Natural gas reserves in the United States fell by 2% in 2019 due to low prices. The Energy Information Administration said in an update on the country's oil and gas reserves, Henry Hub prices for natural gas fell by more than 21% in 2018. The authority noted, adding that despite modest decline, the United States has enough discoveries and production expenses to replace all of the gas that was produced in 2019. That's a mouthful. Basically, let me sum this up. Every year, companies developing oil and gas reserves also calculate how much resources they have yet to either discover or recover. So both from a standpoint of planning from a use standpoint, but also from an investor standpoint. And what we have noticed over the last decade, if you will, is we've developed the Marcellus Shale and the Utica Shale and the Permian Basin and the Bakken in North Dakota, is that almost every year, what we take out of the ground, we're able to find enough or more to replace that. So we haven't reached peak oil. Peak oil is that term, peak energy is that term, where we've reached the pinnacle, and every year thereafter, we're going to run out of this finite resource. And I'm not going to say oil and natural gas isn't finite, but we have such a reservoir of these resources here in the United States, and the technologies that we employ allow us to access more and more of it that we never did before, that we're not in a position where our reserves are dropping. And in fact, that drop that they're talking about, 2% in 2019, probably had more to do with the fact that companies just weren't investing in drilling new wells and or new technologies because pricing was in a bad spot. But the reality is, through technology, we can continue to find this resource and develop formations that we haven't even explored. We know exist, but we haven't even explored yet. So that's all the story is sharing, but it's a good perspective. I believe we have our guest for the second segment already calling in on the line. So why don't we jump to Fender's Fast Facts. Rusty, what do you have for us?
And thanks, Bill. And firstly, a very important week coming up. Happy birthday to Krista Merman from Cooper Electric in Exeter at their flagship store, spending decades there, and just wishing you a happy birthday. And thank you so much for listening to the Shale Gas News each and every week, Krista. Another big day coming up following is Inauguration Day. Of course, it's the day that the president-elect becomes officially sworn in on the Bible as the president of the United States. And some interesting facts about inauguration days gone past, D. George Washington, the shortest inauguration address in history, March 4th, 1793, 135 words long. It took a minute, 3 seconds to deliver. Must have been a cold day that day.
Right.
The inauguration blamed for the president's, for a president's death. This is interesting. I didn't know this. He had Henry Harrison, Inauguration Day, March 4th, 1841. Harrison took the oath, 8,445 words, the longest inauguration speech ever. Wow. It took 31 minutes. Harrison wore no overcoat, scarf, gloves, or hat, kind of like me. But shortly after his inauguration, it was -6. Henry Harrison came down with a cold, which quickly transformed 2 days later into walking pneumonia. So having served only 31 days in office, never been in the office, but serving office, President William Henry Harrison died. He was the first president to die in office and still holds the record for serving the shortest term in 240 years, Dean.
No kidding.
It's pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So help me God, although are not officially part of the official oath, George Washington is credited with adding the line, "So help me God," after he finished the oath during his first inauguration. Yeah. Theodore Roosevelt, however, decided to end his oath with the phrase, "And thus I swear," which became part of the oath.
Okay.
"And thus I swear." I have to listen for that.
Mm-hmm.
Oath givers, although it's not stipulated in the Constitution, it has become a tradition to have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court be the oath giver to the president on Election Day. Now, you won't see this year, but in 1837, outgoing President Andrew Jackson and President-elect Martin Van Buren rode together on Inauguration Day in the same carriage.
No.
You won't see that this year. It's safe to say that we will not see that.
Yeah.
In 1877, the inauguration of Rutherford B. Hayes began the tradition of the president-elect first meeting the outgoing president at the White House for a short meeting, and then they would walk together through the ceremony. That's interesting. Okay. Rutherford B. Hayes started walking 1877.
Okay.
And D, 144 years was election inauguration day held in March. It was always the first Tuesday in March. Mm-hmm. March 4th, 1821, it started. Always been in March until 1933 when it was moved to January. Why was that? Why was it moved?
I'm going again with my standard when we go back hundreds of years and why some date was changed. I'm going to say again, it has to do with the farmers and having it in March may have interfered with their operations.
I would have normally thought that, right. But it's a little more involved with that.
Okay.
In 1933, a device called radio was catching on.
Oh.
In 1929.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, me too. They wanted to make sure that all the votes, which took 2 months in those days to be tabulated,
yeah,
and another 30 days for the word to spread without radio, they wanted to make sure that they had the accurate results of the election. So they waited until March 4th with a 90-day window from Election Day in between to make sure not only that the results were tabulated correctly, uh-huh, but also distributed to the then news services, which were town criers in your local town, county, or parish back in those days.
Sure.
That's why they moved it 4 months later. Later, when they moved it back from March, 2 months back to January for Inauguration Day. So a lot of things pertain, which I would have said, to the farmers, and especially the farmers, and a lot of things pertain to the weather, which is kind of hand in hand with the farmers. But that was because of the communications back then were actually non-existent back in the 1700s and 1800s. So those are the fun facts for Inauguration Day. We should have a fun Inauguration Day this year, D, like probably no other year.
All right, Rusty, thank you for those fun facts. And we'll get to more of the shale gas news with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and me, DC Taylor. More after the break. Stay tuned, please.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
There's plenty of time to get your new roof installed with Green Rhino Builders. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. They service all of Northeast PA. Green Rhino Builders can meet you in person, video chat, or even speak over the phone. They can even get you an estimate without stepping foot on your property. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. That's 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. Green Rhino Builders can even finance your new roof for as low as $79 per month. Does your roof have damage that may have been caused by the weather? Green Rhino Builders is the first company in NEPA to work with all of the major insurance companies and can help you get your replacement roof for only the cost of your insurance deductible. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get someone from Green Rhino Builders out to your home to inspect your roof. Call Green Rhino Builders, 844-900-GREEN, for your free estimate today. Online at greenrhinobuilder.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat-eating needs.
Whole pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top-notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, we have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax-exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out, too, because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. It's my pleasure to welcome back on Aaron Coffer, representative of Luzerne County, representing the great town, city, I don't know if you even call it a city, Kingston, and the greater area there. Aaron, thank you for joining us on the program.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Happy to be here.
I see you were in the news again this week. Economic Recovery Task Force Lead. Sounds like an important title. It seems like the new majority leader, Kerry Bettinghoff, has tasked you with leading a team of representatives to come up with a number of bills and legislations to help Pennsylvania come out of this terrible situation we find ourselves in from an economic standpoint because of COVID. Tell us a little bit about this task force and your initiative.
Yeah, so working under the leader's office on this task force, I was appointed this week to chair this and to work with our other members who have been appointed to this task force. The goal, obviously, of growing jobs, making sure that we can recover coming out of this downturn that we've seen in the economy with so many places shutting down or temporarily closing. And obviously, there's going to be a major economic impact from this. So what can we do to help grow jobs without having a majorly negative impact on our state budget, but make sure we're growing jobs, we're helping support those family-sustaining jobs, and to be going in that direction so that we're going to come out of this stronger than we were before. And that's certainly the goal of looking at this not only through businesses, but looking at our small mom and pops and really trying to just bring forward that workforce development piece of how this all comes together to how we grow jobs in our economy in Pennsylvania.
And Aaron, this isn't an easy task. I know in the past you've been part of these task force or these initiatives, and they were focused on one thing. And what comes to mind is like Mike Terzai's Energize PA initiative. And that was focused on working with the energy industry to create some economic, boon and expansion. And it was very focused. You are now tasked with recovering the entire state, every sector of our economy, from healthcare to energy to manufacturing. And then on top of it, you have some fundamental issues that you have to work on and things like broadband. I mean, this is not going to be an easy walk in the park kind of a job, and it's going to be daunting, but I think you have a good team of people working on it. So tell us a little bit about the focus areas that you guys are maybe initially looking at, but I'm sure you're open to being flexible, and what things we might see come out of your initial conversations.
Yeah, I have to say that the talent that we have working on this task force is really incredible. We have a lot of really talented and intelligent legislators from a variety of backgrounds from across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And their perspective has been really, really great because we all have different areas of expertise in different areas and putting together these packages. So we've met a few times already before this announcement. We actually have a meeting later as well, later today. And really that what we're trying to do is bring forward all these different ideas. So we really talked last time about corporate tax structures and how we can encourage the investment here in Pennsylvania of what that looks like. And so there's a lot of different ideas out there of what we can do to have this pro-growth type perspective. And, I don't want to tip the hand too early, but, I would say just on this one topic of looking at corporate tax structure, we probably had about 10 or 12 ideas already that have come up of things that we can do to help make sure that the investment is here, that the economy is moving in the right direction. We encourage that and provide that stability to our businesses in Pennsylvania.
I know a lot of people in the business community here in Pennsylvania, and quite frankly, a lot of people have looked at Pennsylvania, have said that as a state, we're long overdue for the modernization of our taxing structure. I know from my work in say, the business development realm, businesses are often asked to consider to come here to Pennsylvania and pay extra when compared to places like Texas or West Virginia, Ohio even. So that's, again, not going to be an easy one to overcome, but I think there's a lot of momentum building on, making these changes and trying to, again, not to be redundant, but modernize Pennsylvania.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of businesses look at Pennsylvania and they see our corporate net income tax rate of 9.99 and instantly just have sticker shock. And that number being the highest in the nation and just saying, hey, this is the place that we want to invest in. So part of this has to be about bringing down that number to make sure that we get that investment here in Pennsylvania. And as a side note, actually this week as well, I've been appointed to be our subcommittee chairman for tax modernization. So not only this role on the task force, but also serving as a subcommittee chairman on this tax modernization structure as well. I think it's going to tie in hand on a lot of these proposals that we have to work together to make sure that we foster this this economic development and growth here in Pennsylvania.
I think that's really going to be an underlying theme, as I noticed on some of the signage, envy of the East. You know, the goal of this task force is to make Pennsylvania the envy of the East. We are already the Keystone State. We're blessed with an overabundance of natural resources and a transportation corridor, both rail and freight and shipping. We do have some ports here in the state. That's, you know, eager to get back to work and really meet the needs of the East Coast and the world market. Is there anything being discussed as it relates to manufacturing or infrastructure in the task force currently? I know it's brand new and it's just being introduced, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask.
So I have a few phone calls in already to some of our manufacturing folks, and actually this morning I'll be talking with some of the folks at the Chamber of Commerce as well. But, you know, I think seeing what happened with the pandemic, just infrastructure wise, I think that need of broadband and, you know, having high speed internet while kids are zooming into their classes and things like that has really become more and more of a focus and more important to what's going on in this economy. We've talked about this for years about trying to connect our rural communities to broadband, but I think it's become more and more of a focus with what has been going on through this pandemic. So I think that's going to be a major piece of what we're trying to do. I think a lot of these individualized attention, that's some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about today on specific sectors and ideas that are out there, because I think we have to be looking at, as you mentioned before, there's a lot of different sectors of our economy that we're looking at, and how do we get them jump-started? How do we, you know, provide that stability to reinvest here in Pennsylvania, or if people aren't here in Pennsylvania, to draw their investment here. And, you know, with this type of situation we're dealing with comes great opportunity. And so if we can take what we're looking at now, put it forward as a pro-growth agenda, I think we have a big opportunity here in Pennsylvania. And that's what I'm looking forward to.
And Aaron, as you mentioned, you know, manufacturing, I think we're poised for, you know, the pandemic highlighted the our reliance or dependency on imports. You know, we have a tremendous manufacturing base, you know, not just Pennsylvania, but in the Appalachian Basin. You know, we have the resource, you know, with natural gas and the liquids, and, you know, we have the educational facilities. So I think, like you said, we're definitely poised for hopefully a resurgence, you know, and as you mentioned, you know, you guys are working on a number of issues there. And I guess maybe I'd just, you know, make you stretch here a little bit, but talk a little bit, you know, we have a, you know, with the new administration coming in at the federal level and, you know, some of initiatives. And I know President-elect Biden has mentioned and talked about manufacturing and stuff. And I'd just be curious as we move forward, maybe, you know, how much of this is a, you know, regional effort or working with, you know, the federal government as well, or, you know, like you said, you know, when we talk, you know, Bill and I have had this conversation numerous times, you know, the Appalachian Basin is competing with the Gulf Coast. And I know you have a PA after your name, but, you know, how much of an effort do you think there is, you know, working on a regional basis, you know, to try to bring some of this, you know, whether it be manufacturing back to this area, you know, versus just trying to keep, you know, I know we want everything in Pennsylvania, but what are the regional efforts that you see maybe moving forward?
And as you probably know, my work on House Bill 1100, 732, Act 66, whatever you want to call it, it goes by all those names, and I'll take them all. But, you know, we got that signed into law last year to advance the ball of actually having this clean manufacturing process that we have that has been signed into law and incentivize these businesses to invest. I think a lot of what we're going to be looking at for me personally as a legislator, because I've worked on this so extensively, is to how do we get those multi-billion dollar world-class facilities to locate here in northeastern Pennsylvania or around Pennsylvania. You know, it's going to take us all working together to get this. As you mentioned, it is a cross-promotional regionally as of what we're trying to do. And we, you know, because of the natural gas we have in our area, we're already an attractive place for businesses to look at, but it's our tax structure and other programs that aren't working to help, you know, lure in the big fish. And so we got to get them hooked. We got to get them investing here. I think we have an opportunity to do that, and we just got to keep moving in that direction. So you know, I not that I can say that there's one size fits all here for manufacturing, but those are some conversations I'm going to be having today and trying to advance that ball, and excited for what lies ahead.
Oh, certainly, Aaron. And I just know from the work I've been doing that Act 66 especially, and prior to that, some of the other initiatives from the Energize PA movement are working. You know, some capital is being deployed. Some companies are here looking at Pennsylvania to develop. And I think it's one of those things that we're in a cycle. You know, obviously COVID caused the economy to pull back, but the economy is on a good, you know, foundation to bounce back once all of this COVID situation is under control. People are vaccinated. People are comfortable to go back out into society. But I think companies are going to make investments here in Pennsylvania. I think they've learned that our dependence on foreign countries and even other regions in the United States leaves Pennsylvania, especially in a peculiar situation should something like this arise again. I do want to thank you for coming on the program. And before we let you go, I wanted to give you an opportunity to maybe just remind the listeners of some of the other work you're doing, even if it's just outside of the energy space or the business space, maybe some of your committee assignments before we let you go.
Yeah, so I'm working on the finance, gaming oversight, health and transportation committees. Those I've been appointed to. I'm chairing our subcommittee for tax modernization, and also serving as a deputy whip as well, and also as the chairman of this economic recovery task force. So I think the big thing that I've been working on, it has been this economic stuff. I have things in regard to drawing in larger investments for economic development for different initiatives that follow along state roadways. We have some of the regulations have really impeded some of what we can do in drawing in those, you know, $100 million investments in those bigger type projects. There's a lot that lies out there. And this has been an area that I've been looking at. You know, there's some stuff I'm working on with data centers. There's lots of stuff, but, you know, I'm really proud of the work that I've gotten done in mental health parity last session. There's some other stuff I'm working with what I call Vet Connect, which is about connecting our veterans as they're leaving military service to connect the dots. To get them into doing wellness screenings when they leave the service, as well as to try to connect them to job programs and things where they're returning after finishing their military deployment. So I'm really excited about that initiative. I really think we can get that one on the fast track and get that moving. It came one vote short of going to the governor's desk last year. And so I'm excited to get that one done and looking forward to getting all these types of things moving it early in the legislative process.
Well, Aaron, it looks like you have your work cut out for you in 2021 and 2022. Best of luck to you. I'm sure you'll be on the program again. You're probably one of our top guests, not only because your proximity to the station of the broadcast, but also just because all the great work you are doing here in Northeast Pennsylvania and across the Commonwealth. So thank you again for joining us.
Yep. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Great. We're going to take a quick break here on the show. Stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems and Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000, Montrose, 278-7368.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's continuing education department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Welcome to the Energy Update presented by the Institute for Energy Research for the week of January 18th, 2021. I'm Alex Stevens. On the blog this week, I want to highlight two articles that we have up on the website that stress the important role of helium in our modern economy. Most people probably don't know this, but helium is produced as a secondary product of oil and natural gas extraction. Oil and gas companies harvest helium trapped beneath the Earth's surface in natural gas chambers. And the United States is the largest producer of helium and has been ever since 1925. Nearly all of U.S. helium comes from underground gas fields between Amarillo, Texas, and Hugoton, Kansas, where very high concentration is found. Additionally, ExxonMobil's Chute Creek in Wyoming is expected to produce helium and natural gas for an additional 50 or more years. That is, of course, unless government policies targeting oil and gas shut it down. The two articles that we have up both highlight different aspects of the modern economy where helium plays an important role. The first one is titled "Helium is Instrumental in Semiconductor Manufacturing," and it points to some of the uses of liquid helium in the production of semiconductors. And the second article is titled "Oil and Gas Industry Produces Helium Needed in MRI Equipment," and both can be found on our website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. On the podcast this week, my colleague Jordan McGillis and I will be sitting down with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, which is a free market think tank that covers policy in the state of New Mexico. We'll be discussing a number of topics, including his recent articles published at National Review on Biden's energy policies and their impact on the state of New Mexico. All of that content and more work from IER staff can be found on our website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. Thank you for listening. Until next week, I'm Alex Stevens.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson. I'm DC Taylor. Coming up now for you, there was a recent live streaming event by, it was called the State of American Energy 2021, API's all-virtual event highlighting the U.S. natural gas and oil industry's contributions to modern life, the foundational role of affordable and reliable energy in the nation's economic recovery, and the many ways industry is helping America build a better future. So right now we have part one for you of the API, American Petroleum Institute, CEO and President Mike Summers. Here's part one of his part of the presentation.
Today, I'm going to outline a path, a vision for an affordable, secure, reliable, cleaner energy future. One marked by a shared commitment across many industries to innovation, action, and problem solving. I'm going to challenge myths, share undeniable facts, and bring in other voices to share their perspective. And I want to hear from you. Post comments and ask your questions on your screen throughout my remarks. When Americans talk about energy, the conversation often results in an either-or debate. We've become conditioned to pit using energy against making environmental progress. Yet history has shown that this is a false choice. Both developing energy and reducing emissions are essential to advance our society and protect the environment. Without energy and environmental progress, we risk national security, quality of life, and the American experiment. And that's where natural gas and oil enter the picture. Both are supporting our nation's recovery and eventual comeback from the COVID-19 pandemic. Take the last 10 months. Our products served as critical building blocks for millions of face masks, surgical gowns, and other PPE worn by frontline workers. Our crews worked long shifts to make those products and power hospitals and plants so others could stay safe at their workplace or get the care they need. We fueled emergency vehicles, trucks to transport vaccines, airplanes to deliver medical supplies. In 2020, our nation's most critical time of need, our industry's workforce proved day in and day out that we are essential. The millions of men and women whose jobs are supported by our sector reflect our industry's commitment to step up, take action, and solve problems. Our resilience, values, and principles are essential to America's success and recovery, and they are evident among our workforce and communities across the United States. Because reliable energy is so central and consequential to everything else in the economy, we don't get caught up in every political battle of the moment. We keep the focus on the essential work America depends on, producing and delivering American energy, contributing to America's national security, answering the climate challenges with action and American ingenuity, and keeping energy affordable for all. This focus is nothing new. Here's our track record. First, thanks to American technology and innovation, the United States is now the world's leading producer of natural gas and oil. If the Permian Basin alone was a country, it would be the third highest producing nation in the world. Second, securing America's energy future has long been a point of unity. Since the 1970s, 9 U.S. presidents have focused on American energy security and advocated for reducing our nation's dependence on foreign oil, and for good reason. Third, cleaner U.S. natural gas for electricity generation has removed over 3 gigatons of CO2 emissions that otherwise would have been emitted between 2006 and 2019. What does that mean? Even before the recent economic downturn, U.S. emissions were about as low as in the 1990s, while economic growth doubled. Finally, energy affordability is more important than ever. As we recover from the pandemic, a government that's focused on recovery for all should reject policies that could drive up energy costs and hurt those who can least afford them. And that's the case we're making, an approach we'll take in working with President Joe Biden and his administration. Our country has a lot of economic ground to make up, millions more jobs to recover. And when the business at hand is economic revival, no industry can help more than this one. The pandemic offered reminders of just how crucial the natural gas and oil industry is to everyday life. Consider that back in April, when everything was shut down, global demand for oil was still 81 million barrels a day. Many of the PPE products that everybody needed, things like gloves and face masks and clear plastic shields, are petroleum-based, yet lost in the rhetoric by some, these facts are ignored. We are all familiar with the caricatures of the oil and gas industry, but I can assure you that whatever the issue, whatever the controversy, we're going to stay on mission with positions based in reason, fact, and reality. Change is in motion, but it's a long arc, and the majority of the world's energy needs are projected to come from natural gas and oil far into the future. Meeting this demand is going to require hundreds of billions of dollars of investment, more exploration, more production. Our industry is prepared to meet this challenge. When we talk about private energy investment, infrastructure should come to mind. The economy cannot run at full speed unless we deliver energy from where it is to where it's needed. And there's no safer means than a pipeline. This nation is already served by hundreds of thousands of miles of pipelines. Americans depend on that network every day, and we're going to need many more miles, which is not a problem, but an opportunity. Infrastructure is an unrivaled job creator, from the worksite to the manufacture of materials. And it happens that in America, we're very good at building pipelines. Altogether, we're an industry that supports more than 10 million American jobs. It's a strong, skilled workforce made up of men and women who like the jobs that they have. And more than that, they know that they're involved in something essential. Here's Jim Snell from Steam Fitters Local 420 in Pennsylvania.
Thanks, Mike. Really appreciate it. I'd also like to say thank you to API for giving me the platform to voice my opinion on the state of affairs when it comes to oil and gas in the southeastern part of the state of Pennsylvania, in particular, the Philadelphia and the surrounding region. Look, oil and gas to Steamfitters Local 420, which I am the business manager, it's been a boon, to say the least. I've been a business manager of Steamfitters Local 420 since April of 2019. And just in that short period of time from then until now, there's been quite a few projects related to the oil and gas industry, one of them being the Mariner East project, pipeline project. This has affected my members in a very significant way, in a great way. That project has taken on many, many members of Steamfitters Local 420. And once this project's completed, it's going to benefit hundreds and hundreds of members of Steamfitters Local 420. They're going to be able to be on a site working, okay, at the Marcus Hook Complex, making quite a bit of money, wages and benefits, which is going to be extremely beneficial to them and their families, as well as my local union. You know, these are projects where they are working a lot of the time. They're working overtime, making good wages, being able to buy their first homes, being able to send kids to college. It has a direct effect on my members. It also has a direct effect on my benefit plans for Steamfitters Local 420, my health and welfare funds, my pension funds, my annuity. Okay, my annuity fund. When the oil and gas industry is busy, which it is, has been for the most part, it fills my coffers up of those certain funds. It's, you know, my members, when they're on these projects, they're able to hone their skill set. You take, for instance, a welder. You know, a welder just wants to weld all day and be productive. On oil and gas projects, he's able to do that. Okay, he's able to hone his skill set. Whereas compared to, you know, a renewable site, not able to do that. You know, this is an industry which has been beneficial to my members for years and years and years. And with the abundance of shale that's right under our feet, we're hoping for many more years to come. Mike, I'd like to thank you for giving me this opportunity. Take care.
Jim speaks for so many other workers who ask only to do the important work they know best. Yet they are often left as onlookers in attempts to close down projects like Line 5, Dakota Access, Keystone XL, and the Atlantic Coast Pipelines. Here are projects essential to our economic comeback, and yet each one of them is a magnet for obstruction and litigation.
And that again, Mike Summers, the president and CEO of the American Petroleum Institute. They recently did a live streaming event called State of American Energy. And that was part one of his part of the presentation. We'll have more of Mike Summers in a future show here on the Shale Gas News. I'm DC Taylor, along with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson. And coming up in a couple of minutes, we got your job segment. We'll tell you what happened with all the careers, possible potential career for you in the gas and energy industries. But first, it's the top five stories of the past week. And each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So once again, this week we have a summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days as MarcellusDrilling.com. Coming in at number five last week, MVP asks FERC to use alternative method to finish 77 miles. Mountain Valley Pipeline, MVP, a 303 mile, 2 billion cubic feet per day pipeline to move Marcellus Utica gas from West Virginia to Southern Virginia has been hounded by radicals from big green groups, including the Sierra Club, for years. Big Green apparently has the clown judges from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit in its back pocket because the clowns keep overturning legal and legitimately issued permits by government agencies, including the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. MVP is now trying to get around the court's obstructionism with an alternative method to install pipe. In November, the Fourth Circuit granted a full stay on MVP's nationwide permit 12, that's NWP 12, a permit reissued by the Army Corps of Engineers for a second time. NWP 12 allows the pipeline to cross creeks and rivers and wetlands using the open cut method of laying pipeline. That is, you dig a trench, lay the pipe, and cover it up. Rather than risk another year or two or three in delays, the project is already a year overdue, MVP recently asked the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, for permission to change the method of crossing creeks and rivers and wetlands for the first 77 miles of the pipeline from using open cut to using underground horizontal directional drilling, HDD, instead. Drilling, and that is drilling a hole underground and pushing and pulling the pipe through the hole. Rusty?
I love when he uses clowns, you know, clowns. Like, much like I do, ipso fatso, what do you call the judges and the same
thing? Ipso fatso. All right, Archie.
Okay, D. Number four, Southwestern Equinor win post-production deduction lawsuit in West Virginia. Just coming to light for us is a decision issued by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit on December 1st, a ruling on post-production deductions by drillers when calculating gas royalties at the wellhead in West Virginia. Now, the drillers in this case were Southwestern Energy and Equinor, formerly known as Stat Oil. The drillers won the right to claim certain post-production deductions. The December court decision by the Fourth Circuit affirmed Southwestern and Equinor can use the net back method to determine at the wellhead price, which means the price downstream less a cost to get there. The landowners in Ohio County argued a deduction of the cost to move the gas to market is not allowed under West Virginia law. The landowners lost, even though a lower court previously ruled in the landowners' favor. D?
Okay, the third most popular story over the past week is coming at number three. PA's UGI Corporation deal to buy West Virginia's Mountaineer Gas Company. UGI Corporation, one of Pennsylvania's largest natural gas utility companies, is buying Mountaineer Gas Company, one of West Virginia's largest natural gas utility companies, for $540 million. UGI serves 700,000 customers across Pennsylvania and one county in Maryland. Mountaineer serves 215,000 customers across West Virginia. Both companies are big buyers of Marcellus Utica shale gas. Rumors began to circulate just prior to Thanksgiving that Mountaineer had a suitor. The rumors were true. The deal is, of course, subject to federal and state approvals. It's expected to close by June. The Marcellus Shale and its abundant supplies was mentioned in the UGI press release as one of the attractions in buying Mountaineer. Rusty.
Number two, D.C. Columbiana County asked the Ohio governor to okay shale gas pipeline to Lake Erie. Now, 2 weeks ago, Trumbull County, Ohio's Board of Commissioners, sent a letter to Governor Mike DeWine requesting a DeWine order, a feasibility study on a lake-to-river natural gas pipeline. I end the quote there. Project that will extend along State Route 11, the corridor, from Columbiana County all the way to Ashtabula Harbor on Lake Erie, about 100 miles away. The pipeline will flow Utica gas produced in Columbiana and surrounding counties to manufacturers located along the Erie shoreline. The intent of the letter was to not only encourage DeWine to order the study, but to tee up an approval by him for a right-of-way along Route 11 to build that pipeline. D.
All right. The number one most popular story on MDN over the past week, Blackman's predictions for oil and gas industry in 2021. David Blackman, a independent energy analyst and consultant based in Mansfield, Texas, Blackman is a Forbes contributor and has a 39-year career in the oil and gas industry, most of it in public policy and managing regulatory and legislative issues for various companies, including Burlington Resources, Shell, El Paso Corporation, FTI Consulting, and LINN Energy. Blackman has been around the block a few times and understands not only the technical aspects of our industry, but the politics as well. He recently peered into his crystal ball and predicted what lies ahead. In other words, challenges for the oil and gas industry in 2021, including a regulatory onslaught from Joe Biden. The following column and us bringing it to you is not an attempt at scaremongering. We want to, as clearly as possible, understand what is about to hit us so we can prepare for and fight against it. Example, the EPA during the Barack Obama administration implemented the odious Waters of the United States, WOTUS rule, which granted the federal government the right to regulate water sources down to ditches and mud puddles. And no, we're not joking. It took almost 4 years, but Donald Trump's EPA finally reworked and fixed WOTUS. One of the things on the way in a Biden administration, according to Blackman, is a redo of WOTUS to the bad old days under Obama. WOTUS and many of the proposed changes you will read on MarcellusDrilling.com, they directly affect Marcellus Utica Drilling. So definitely check that out, MarcellusDrilling.com.
A little WOTUS from the POTUS.
WOTUS. WOTUS.
Oh, story.
Regulating mud puddles.
Man, oh man.
Those are the top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at MarcellusDrilling.com/email. And now it is time for the job segment here on the Shale Gas News. We're telling you about your careers, and it's brought to you by Lackawanna College and their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty.
Thank you, DC Taylor in Pennsylvania. Williams Companies, right off the bat, looking for an operations technician level one based in Montrose. The Weir Group, looking for a wellhead technician trainee out of Sayre. Vineyard Oil and Gas Company, looking for a senior accountant out of Northeast Pennsylvania. ROC Service Company, an opening for an experienced roustabout out of 8-4. Resource Transport, a frac sand driver out of Towanda. Texas Specialty Sands, looking for an experienced frac sand field operator. It's also out of Towanda. Borden Lawson, a mechanical designer based in Wexford. New Park Mats and Integrated Services, looking for laborers and foremen, multiple jobs out of Towanda. And Honeywell, looking for a field service technician based in Fort Washington in the Philadelphia area. In Ohio, Contract Land Staff, looking for a GIS technician for the entire state of Ohio. Same deal with Stantec, looking for an account manager for their oil and gas unit for the entire state of Ohio. ECM Energy Services, an administration assistant out of St. Clairsville. Frac NDT, an entry-level technician opening based in Barnesville. KLX Energy Services, a testing assistant for Flowback out of New Philadelphia. Southern Cross Field Services, a field service technician for their gas leak survey inside pipe inspection team. That's headquartered in Clifton, Ohio. SEI Oil Field Services, roustabouts, that's plural, out of Dover. American Petroleum, a state communication lead out of Columbus. And Wallace Pincher Group, looking for an engineer. Entry level, 0 to 5 years experience is all that's needed, based in Mansfield. Moving to the mountain state of West Virginia, U.S. Well Services, an HSE supervisor, that's health, safety, and environmental. It's out of Jane Lou. Diversified Gas and Oil, a rig operator and wireline hand based in Ravenswood. EnLink Midstream, an opening for a technician out of St. Mary's. The Exelon Corporation, a senior business development manager headquartered in Charleston. Williams Companies, an opening for an operations technician levels 2 and 3. It's out of Moundsville. TC Energy, looking for a U.S. real-time systems intern headquartered in Charleston. In New York State, Energy Transfer Family of Partnerships, looking for pipeliner trainees. It's out of Big Flats. It's up in the Elmira area. Resource Transport, looking for a frac sand handler out of Binghamton. Southern Cross Field Service is a gas meter technician for the entire Westchester County area. That includes White Plains. A Marathon Energy Corporation and energy analyst, that's for Syracuse, with a temporary remote location from home for 120 days. That's a Marathon Energy. New Frontier Energy Corporation, looking for an energy global supply chain analyst based in New York City. And Tecogen, T-E-C-O-G-E-N, Tecogen Incorporated, a field service technician and generator technician, also based in Valley Stream and the White Plains, Westchester County area of New York. And those are the jobs this week, as DC mentioned, sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. As we continue on to the year that's called 2021, we thank you for listening so far to the Shale Gas News. We're coming up on 8 years fairly soon. Thanks once again, for all your interest in the program and right here on The Talker. We'll see you next week, same time, same radio stations, right here on the Shale Gas News. For Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thank you so much for listening to the Shale Gas News